Jacob wrestles at Jabbok. Yes, what is a year compared with this tale? And who would be miserly with time or patience on its account? Joseph practiced patience. He had to live and be a statesman and a businessman in the meantime. The brothers practiced patience, well or ill, with Jacob's self-will, and Benjamin did too, restraining his curiosity about the journey and the curious keeper of the market. We are better off than they, and that not because we already know how it all turned out. That, indeed, is a disadvantage compared with the position of those who lived in the story and experienced it in their own persons, for we must summon up a lively feeling of suspense where by rights there can be none. But yet we do have a certain advantage, because we have power over the whole quantum of time to stretch or shrink it at will. We do not have to pay for the year of waiting in all its daily ups and downs, as Jacob had to pay with his 7 years in Mesopotamia. We may simply open our lips and say, "A year passed, and lo, it has passed." It has passed, and Jacob is ripe. It is a well-known fact, of course, that meteorological conditions in this quarter of the globe remained erratic for a considerable time. The drought continued to oppress the lands in which our story moves. Misfortunes, they say, never come singly. One leads to another, and then to another, until, instead of the hit-or-miss pattern usually obtaining in this world of chance and change, it seems as though fate took a diabolic delight in making the same bad luck come to pass time after time with infuriating repetition. Of course, there simply has to come a turn sooner or later, otherwise it would end by nullifying itself. But it can go on and on for years, without rhyme or reason. That it should repeat itself as many as 7 times is not, generally speaking, anything extraordinary. In our explanations of the cloud movements between the sea and the African Alps and the land of the Moors, where the waters of the Nile take their rise, we have indeed considered the how, but not the why of this situation. For once you begin with the why, you can never get to the end. It is like the dunes by the sea, where behind each foreland lies still another, and the space of time where you might come to final rest is somewhere in dim infinity. The Nourisher did not grow great and overflow its banks, because in the land of the Moors it did not rain. It did not rain because no rain fell in Canaan, and that was because the sea manufactured no clouds for 7, or certainly at least for 5 years on end. Why not? Here, too, there are overarching reasons reaching into cosmic matters and to the heavenly bodies which doubtless control our wind and weather. There are the sunspots. They are a sufficiently remote cause, perhaps, yet since every child knows that the sun is not the last and highest, and since Abram in his time refused to worship it as the final cause, we ourselves should be ashamed to stop at it. There are higher orders in the All, which compelled even the sun's fixed regal status to subordinate its motions, and the sunspots on its disk are, in their turn, so to speak, a subordinate why. But even from this you must not conclude that the final and ultimate resting place lies in those super-systems or in still superior systems. The ultimate obviously lies, or has its seat, in a remoteness which is at the same time a nearness, since in it farness and nearness, cause and effect, are all one. It is where we find ourselves by losing ourselves, and where we suspect a design which, for the sake of its ends, renounces even the bread for the offering. The drought and the scarcity were sore and oppressive indeed. It did not take even a whole year for Jacob to be ripe. The provisions which his sons had so luckily and uncannily got for nothing had all been consumed. They had not been much among so many, and more were not to be had anywhere in the land at any price. So, a few moons earlier than the year before, Israel brought up the subject the brothers had been waiting for. "Tell me what you think," he said, "for to me it seems that there is a preposterous contradiction yawning between the riches which I own and which have increased since I broke the dusty bolts of Laban's kingdom, and the present bad state of things. For we have neither seed corn nor baked stuff, and our children cry for bread. Yes, they told him, that was due to the bad times. They are strange times, said he. A man has a whole troop of grown sons whom, with God's help, he did not fail to raise up to his aid, and they sit here on their backsides and lift not a finger against the want that consumes us. Yes, that is easy to say, but what can we do? Do? In Egypt, as I hear on all sides, there is grain market. How would it be if you gird yourselves for the journey and go down and buy a little bread?
That would be splendid, Father, and we would have gone already, but you forget what the harsh ruler down there said about Benjamin, that we should not see his face unless our youngest brother were with us, and we could show him on the spot in token of our good faith. It appears the man is an astrologer. He says that of the 12, one is hidden behind the sun. But it must not be two at once that are hidden, and the 11th must be set before him before he will even see us again. Give us Benjamin, and we will go.
Jacob sighed. I knew that would come, he said, and that you would only torment me again about the child. And he chided them loudly. Unhappy that ye are, and unheeding! Why did you have to prattle and tattle, and in your folly turn out all your affairs before the man, so that he heard you had another brother, my son, and could demand him from me? If you had been dignified and stuck to business without prattling, he would know nothing about Benjamin, and could not ask my heart's blood as the price of flour for bread. Richly you deserve that I should curse you, one and all.
Do not, Lord, said Judah. For what would become of Israel? Consider in what straits we were, and how we were forced to tell truth when he set about us with his suspicion and examined us about our kindred. For he questioned us so narrowly. Does your father yet live? Have you another brother? Is your father well? And when we told him it was not so well with you as it should be, he scolded us loudly and railed at us for letting it come to that.
Went Jacob, and stroked his beard.
We were frightened, Judah went on, by his severity, yet drawn to him by his interest. For after all, it is no small thing when such a great man of the world, at whose mercy we then were, shows such concern.
And how, Judah went on, could they have foreseen that the man would demand their brother's presence and lay upon them so bindingly to fetch Benjamin down? Thus Judah, the tried and tested man, who today took the word. For they had so planned it among them, in case Jacob showed signs of being ripe. Reuben was already out of the field, after he had impulsively made the clumsy and offensive suggestion that Jacob should strangle his two sons. Levi, though much upset by the loss of his twin, and only half a man since then, could not be put forward on account of Shechem. But Judah spoke very well, with manly persuasiveness and warmth of feeling. Israel, he said, overcome yourself, even though you wrestle with yourself until the dawn, as once before you did with another. This is a Jabbok hour. Would you go out of it like a hero of God? Lo, the man's mind down there is unchangeable. We shall not see him, and Leah's third son remains fallen to the house of bondage, and there is not even a thought of bread, unless Benjamin is with us. I, your lion, know how bitter it is for you to yield up Rachel's last pledge to take a journey, on account of the being always at home, and worse than that, a journey down to the land of mud and dead gods. And you probably do not trust this man, the lord in the land, suspecting that he is laying a trap for us, and will give back neither the pledge nor the youngest, or perhaps not any of us at all. But I say to you, I who know men, and expect not much good from high or low, the man is not such a man. So far I know him, and know that, and would put my hand in the fire for it. To lure us into a trap is not in his mind. He may be strange and not quite canny, but he is also very winning, and though full of error, yet not false.
I, Judah, go bail for him, as also I go bail for your youngest son, our brother. Let him go down at my side, and I will be father and mother to him, like you, both on the road and in the land, that he strike not his foot against a stone, nor is besmirched in his soul by the vices of Egypt. Give him into my hand, that we may journey at length, and live and not die, we, you, and the little children of us all. For at my hand shall you require him, and if I bring him not and set him before your face, I will bear the blame all my life long. As you have him now, so shall you have him again, and could have had him long since as now you have him. For had we not delayed, we could have been there and back twice over with the pledge, the witness, and the bread. Until the dawn, answered Jacob, give me time. And by next morning he had surrendered and acquiesced. He would give Benjamin to go a journey, not a journey to Shechem, a few days distant, but some 17 days down into the underworld. Jacob had red eyes, and failed not to express how hard the enforced resolve had borne upon his soul. But as he had not only honorably and sorely wrestled with necessity, and come off conqueror, but expressed his pain with such great-hearted dignity, they were all much edified, and all those round about him said with feeling, Lo, Israel has this night overcome himself. His head drooped upon his shoulder as he said, If it must be so, and stands written in bronze that everything shall go out from me, then take it, and do it, and go forth, for I consent. Take of the choicest things in your packs, for which our land is praised throughout the world, to present to the man to soften his heart, oil of balsam, gum of tragacanth from the goat's thorn, grape honey cooked to a thickness, to drink in water or sweeten the dessert, also pistache nuts and fruit of the terebinth, and call it little in his eyes. Furthermore, take double the money, for the new grain and for the earlier time as well, for I recall that the money was found in your sacks, and there may have been a mistake. And take Benjamin. Yes, yes, you hear me aright. Take him, and lead him down to the man, that he may stand before him. I give my consent. I see on your faces consternation painted at my words, but my decision is final. Israel girds himself up to be as a man who is bereft of his children. But may El Shaddai, he broke out, his hands raised to heaven, give you pity in the man's eyes, that he yield you your other brother back, and Benjamin. Lord, only as a loan, and to be returned, give I him to you. For the journey only, let no misunderstanding be between me and you, for I offer him not to be devoured like my other son. I will have him back. Remember, O Lord, the bond, that the heart of man become fine and holy in you, and you in it. Fall not below the feeling human heart, O Mighty One, and defraud me not of the boy on the journey, and fling him to the devourer. But be moderate, I implore you, and honorably return me the loan. Then I will serve you in the dust, and burn before you what shall ravish your nostrils, the very best parts.